The Comic Studies minor at the University of Oregon is the first of its kind in the nation. It presents students with an international, historical, and critical perspective on the art of comics, from editorial cartoons to comic books and graphic novels. Joining us this morning is University of Oregon English professor Ben Saunders, director of the Comic Studies program, and Glenn Wally, who is the assistant professor of Japanese literature. Gentlemen, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Well, let me start off a little bit and ask about the history of comics. I know that a lot of people still probably in this country think of comics as something just for kids or something on the editorial page. But, Ben, it actually goes back quite a ways, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. What we might refer to as comics culture goes back, it's at least as old as print culture, depending on the person that you're speaking to. There's a professor of archaeology in France who believes that we can go all the way back to cave painting, and the reason that, you know, the bison on the walls of the caves at Charcot have multiple legs is because by flaming torchlight they looked like they were moving, and it was early animation. Mm. So it all depends on who you speak to, really. But it, I certainly would see the tradition of comics as being as old as print culture, at least.
Now, Oregon, you've been offering these courses for a while, correct? But this is the start of a new program, thanks in part to a large grant you received.
Well, the program itself began enrolling students last year, and the endowment that we've received from a very generous private donor has been, I think, in recognition of the work that we have managed to do in a cost-neutral kind of way. So different comics classes have been taught at the university level, not just at the U of O, but all over the country. People have been able to take what you might think of as a kind of a fun elective in, you know, graphic novels or comics, or individual graphic novels have popped up in classes now for, I would say, probably 30, 40 years. That's not new. What's new is organizing a genuinely interdisciplinary course of undergraduate study, which will allow students to read comics and graphic novels from multiple cultures. So we have classes in French, for example, that are doing war and French comics. And, of course, Glenn's work with Japanese comics.
Well, you mentioned that multidisciplinary approach. What are some of the classes that will be offered?
Well, just this year we have, as I mentioned, in the Romance languages, we have a class in French called War in French Comics. I myself teach a class on the history of the American superhero, so that's a more, obviously, 1930s up. Then there's an introductory class which covers sort of the range of forms, so that includes gag cartoons, which go back some way, as well as monthly comic books, newspaper strips, and the more contemporary graphic novel. And that's organized more by form than by chronology. And then within East Asian languages, there are Glenn's classes, which he's probably better equipped to tell you about than I am, and also classes in comparative literature on world comics.
Glenn, tell us a little bit about your program that you offer.
Next term, I'm offering a course that basically covers 1,000 years of Japanese comics. As Ben mentioned, comics are probably as old as print culture. In fact, in Japan, I think they go back into manuscript culture. So we see some of the most celebrated works of Japanese art taking a comics form, that is, telling stories through sequences of pictures. So I'm running a survey that looks at Japanese comics from back in the 12th, 13th century all the way up to the present day.
If you'd like to join us this morning for the conversation, anywhere, you can reach us on the Jefferson Exchange with our toll-free line, which is 800-838-3760. Here in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. What got you guys interested in comics as a study?
Well, in my case, I mean, comics got me interested in reading. The first experience that I can really recall of having that kind of vanishing into the page and not noticing time going by, and also quietly amusing myself, I suppose, which was a delight to my parents, was with comics. So probably around the age of 6. I've been reading comics since I was 6 years old.
And what about you, Glenn?
I sort of had the same experience as Ben, although I'd add a second stage to it. I read comics as a child, but then as I, you know, was growing up for my teen years, probably like most of us in this country, I was educated into the idea that comics were kid stuff and grown-up people read serious things. And then I went to Japan when I was about 20 and realized that in Japan, adults of all ages read comics, take them seriously, and that this form, this medium that I'd loved as a kid, didn't have to be left behind by serious adults. And that sort of reawakened in me this interest in comics as a medium rather than just a collection of certain kinds of stories.
You know, as I look at some of the older historical comics that were in the newspapers back in the 19th century and whenever, it seems like there was almost a way of being the court jester. You could say things in the comics politically that might get you in deep trouble if you said them otherwise. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, well, quite possibly. The issue of censorship in this country is very complicated because of First Amendment protection, it tends to come less from the top down than the bottom up. There are issues of sort of community standards, and then there's what editors will choose to run. So, I mean, I'll give you an example. It's much more recent than the 19th century, but in the 1960s when Charles Schulz made the decision to integrate Peanuts by introducing an African-American character, something that he chose to do in 1968, which is not an accidental choice. There were newspapers in the South that some of whom chose not to carry the strip, and that was their choice. That was an editorial choice. That wasn't something that, you know, I think if Schulz had chosen to fight that one on First Amendment grounds, he might have got somewhere. But it means that this history is very complicated. What we're talking about in the end is a commercial art form that is designed to sell papers. In case of newspaper strips and editorial cartoons, the function is to make people more likely to spend their dime on the paper. So it's complicated. I think the court jester is not a bad analogy, because I imagine, you know, in the court of Henry VIII, it was probably, you had to be careful what you said.
I bet. Well, are there some real practical applications to comics? Are they used, especially with children, can they be used as a kind of therapy in that?
Well, the person who really should be speaking to you about this is Professor Elizabeth Wheeler, who is teaching that particular class. I know that she is interested. She's particularly interested in the phenomenon of young adult and teen literature. And in the last 10 or 15 years, the number of graphic novels that are aimed at that particular audience has just leapt by. It's exponential increase in publication. It's a very attractive market to publishers, which suggests that it's one of the things that you can actually, in this sort of age of smartphones, this is one of the things that you can get teenagers to read, which means that teen and young adult stories tend to explore issues that are painful to adolescents, issues about coming to terms with one's own difference, perhaps, mm-hmm. or with dealing with problems in the home, issues such as substance abuse or sexual abuse from parents or amongst one's friends. These are topics that are explored in ways that I think can be therapeutic and healing for people who've suffered from them, and it's not just graphic novels and comics that are drawn to these themes. There's a lot of literature oriented towards the teenage reader that approaches these themes.
We're speaking this morning with Professors Ben Saunders and Glenn Wally from the University of Oregon. They have a new program that is a comics and cartoon studies program and offers minor in that particular field of study for those who might be interested in that. You can join the conversation this morning on the Jefferson Exchange anywhere from 800-838-3760, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I wanted to ask Professor Wally about Japanese Magna. We're familiar with that now in this country, but is Asian comics in general and Japanese comics in particular much broader than that?
Well, the term manga basically just translates the English word comics, or it's a pretty good equivalent of it. So it describes a medium that includes a wide range of reading material, all the way from things aimed at preschoolers, kids just learning to read, to adults. There are manga that are about child raising, for example, or manga about particular hobbies, cooking, artistry, things like that. So in a sense, the word manga is what we understand it to be, but I think that the field of manga produced in Japan is much broader than tends to be translated into English and brought into this country. So definitely one of the things I try to make students aware of is that there's more out there in manga than just what they can see at the local bookstore.
And you mentioned, I think, Ben, you mentioned that also you'll have a course on French comics and the war. Talk a little bit about that specifically.
The professor who's teaching, one of the wonderful things about this minor is that this is an art form that has this extended history and an international reach. And what that means is that it's well beyond the purview of any individual scholar to actually do a decent job introducing people to it. One of the frustrating things about being the comic book guy at any university is that you're sort of expected to introduce it. I mean, imagine being the film guy or the novel guy. It just doesn't work that way. No one person could possibly introduce students in an intellectually rigorous and responsible way to this huge range of languages, cultures, and long historical stretch back of time of material. So there's just we have, therefore, different faculty with specialisms in those fields doing that. Now, Professor Fabien Moore is a specialist who does a lot of work on the literature of the French Revolution and has an interest in the representation of violence. She was drawn to the topic of the representation of war and conflict in French comics. The Franco-Belgian tradition is one of the most distinguished traditions of the 20th century. So her class begins with some late 19th century materials and moves through to contemporary French creators such as Jacques Tardy with their representations of different kinds of conflict.
I grew up in an era with Mad Magazine, which seemed wonderfully subversive to me. I don't know if it really was or not, but it seemed that way. For young people today, are there equivalents? Is the internet so broad that we've moved past the need for something like a Mad Magazine?
No, I think we always need satirists. Where they work might be in different places. I'm sure that, there are all kinds of dark corners of the internet where people are doing fascinating satirical work. And actually some of my own students do powerful satirical work and put them up as YouTube videos. That's got one of the interesting things, I suppose, about the contemporary moment is that sort of anybody can do it. Good models of satirical humor are as rare, I think, today as they were in the 1950s. And it's interesting that you should mention Mad, because one of the things that we're working towards actually is an exhibition of original comic book art from the 1950s from the EC Publishing Company, which published Mad. So at some point in the next couple of years, we're actually going to be hosting a major show with some key examples from early Mad, the covers of Mad number 2, 3, 4, and some complete interior stories, as well as the science fiction and horror comics that were published by the same company. That's a very fertile period that's, the influence in the larger history of American pop culture of that, of Mad and of the other comics that were published by EC, like Tales from the Crypt and Weird Science, that's an influence that continues to into the present moment, and I think it's important that students should know where it comes from. This used to be something that people were ashamed of and embarrassed about. It was seen as trash culture. I think now it's being recognized actually as one of the great American contributions to popular culture.
The art was so rich from the comics in the mid 20th century. Are we seeing that today? Are the artists as good? I guess from an older generation, you always tend to think, oh, it was better when I was young. But are we seeing that kind of quality work done today as well?
Oh yes, absolutely, and in far more genres than we were able to explore in the mid 20th century, because the perception of comics being a children's medium has pretty much fallen away. I don't know if you've ever, there's a reason why when you walk into the pharmacist or grocery store, you don't see any comics anymore. It's because the audience is not that audience any longer. The audience that used to pick up their comic books with their pocket money at the pharmacist, that's completely disappeared. The audience is now, by and large, a teenage and older audience. The audience for traditional, traditional American comic books, the superhero genre stuff, is older than that. That's mid-20s and up. That's a graying fan base. A lot of the most devoted fans of the superhero comic book are in their 40s. So with the newer material and the talented artists who work in this medium, they're now able to work in any number of genres. They can be doing slice of life stories. They can be doing science fiction, war stories, biography, memoir is a huge component of the current crop of graphic novels. Very many of them are not novels at all. It's a misnomer. They are memoirs, people telling their own life story.
I wanted to ask Professor Wally a question. Are comics a good source for cultural exchange between, in your specific case, you've looked at Asian comics. Is this a way for different cultures to communicate with one another?
I think absolutely that's the case. One of the exciting developments in my larger field of Japanese literature is how the spread of manga in this country has fueled an actual genuine popular interest in Japanese culture that really wasn't there before. I mean, when I started studying Japanese in the late 80s, early 90s, it was basically about let's learn Japanese so we can make money from Japanese economy. But now the students I'm seeing in my classes, even beyond my comics classes, are all interested in Japanese culture for its own sake, and it's entirely due to their exposure to Japanese comics. I mean, I think it's the kind of thing that, pictures are in many ways easier to digest than words, and I don't mean to say that they're an unsophisticated art form, but it has a natural appeal that can get people thinking about other cultures, exposed to other cultures, in a way that perhaps print-only or writing-only stories can't always do.
Ben Saunders, I want to ask, is there an effort to bring young people back to printed comics, or is the future strictly going to be electronic for those that are young and coming up today?
That's a great question, Mel. I'm sure that there are lots of people who believe that digital comics is the future. I think it's one path. My own experience, however, is that there's something about the tactile experience and the turning of the page. I generally encourage my students to read comics in printed form. There are certain experiences that just don't translate very well to that of the screen. But having said that, I think digital comics is a very exciting avenue forward for creators and for students. You asked a question about the artists earlier, and the real difference is not in terms of quality. There are as many good and bad artists working in the comics medium now as there were in the mid-20th century, but many of them now don't work with a pen and paper. They work directly onto a screen. There isn't a sort of, an original drawn board any longer for a lot of artists. So as comics creators increasingly make the work digitally, it makes more sense that people will also encounter it digitally.
We have about a minute left. Where do you hope the program is headed in the future?
I have some big dreams. I hope that we can find further private support. One of the reasons that comics has been around as a cool class for many, many years but never had a program like this is no one has ever hired to teach this. I was hired to teach Renaissance studies, and I still do that. And Glenn was hired to teach Japanese literature and culture, and he still does that. I would like to have support to have a dedicated teaching line to this, so that we have maybe the first named chair in comic studies at the University of Oregon, and whatever happens to me or anyone else, the discipline will never go away. I would like our program to be the best in the world.
And you'll have some distinguished folks visiting during this trial run, is that correct?
Oh, yes, and we are, you know, we already have. Portland is one of the largest comics communities in the country, and so our geographic location has really helped us with this. We're able to bring creators from Portland to the University of Oregon to meet our students regularly. Now we can bring them from further afield, which is a very exciting opportunity.
Well, I'd like to thank my guests who've been with me this morning, University of Oregon English Professor Ben Saunders, Director of the Comic Studies Program at the University, and Glenn Wally, an Assistant Professor of Japanese Literature, an exciting new program, the first of its kind that we have here in the nation, and an opportunity to study comics and their impact on the world, looking at it from a multidisciplinary standpoint. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Mel. Thanks for having us.
And coming up in the next half hour, we'll be talking with Pam Joy. She has won an E-Achievement Award for her work as a director of the Angel Network here in Southern Oregon.